Maria Bello was really good.
Till the end, I'm saving your lives. All I heard was, I don't want your life. Like, I just thought it was James Vanderbeek. Vanderbeek. Like,
shit. I gotta get a tagline.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I got one for you. Okay. Oh, damn it. That didn't work out as well as I thought it was. Because I thought, like, I just made a Vanderbeek reference. Mm-hmm. Lights. Let's do Friday Night Lights. And then I remembered, like, I referenced Varsity Blues. Yes.
And it only matters if I leave that in as the cold open, the Vanderbeek thing.
Oh, I didn't know we were recording.
Oh, yeah. What's up? This is Movies On Up. In a town where winning is everything, these guys have nothing to lose. I never lose when I'm seated across from my co-host, Mr. Dave Bacella.
Full hearts. Full eyes.
Clear eyes.
Yeah.
That's not the movie, but close enough. They're both about football. That's Mr. Dave, the quarterback of this show. I am Ryan. We are Movies On Up. Our tagline for this week, in a town where winning is everything, these guys have nothing to lose. That is from a football movie. If you think you know what football movie it comes from, it is not Friday Night Lights. It's a different one.
Varsity Blues.
It is Varsity Blues. Really, all you got to do is send us an email, moviesonup@gmail.com. All it has to say is Varsity Blues. And if you send us a picture of James Vanderbeek, you'll probably be assured to win. You can leave your guess, which had better be Varsity Blues, on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup. Or you can tweet at us on the Twitter, @moviesonup. You can tweet Varsity Blues, or simply tweet a picture of the whipped cream bikini. We'll know what you mean. And you can win a prize package.
Or send a video of yourself saying, I don't want your life.
I was gonna
in a whipped cream bikini.
Yep, that's it. If you do any of those things, you could be in line for a prize package, which is going to consist of photos of Dave and I in the whipped cream bikini. And who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want, in the middle of, well, I guess the beginning of August, a good discussion about a horror movie? Anytime's a good time to talk horror, as far as Dave and I are concerned. This week, David F. Sandberg's Annabelle Creation hits theaters. And since Dave and I have never actually seen Annabelle, we thought we're going to have to go in a different direction for this episode. So we picked a different David F. Sandberg movie, one that I had seen last year and kind of liked. And Dave had not yet had the pleasure.
Saw it last night.
He saw it last night. Lights Out, starring Teresa Palmer, Gabriel Bateman, and Maria Bello. Did you watch it last night with the lights on or off?
They're about half and half. Our
house,
it was
a dimmer.
I can't even tell in our house. It's usually light or off. I just walk around.
How many of the kids watched this with you?
This one I made them be out of the room for.
Fair enough.
Because this one I thought would be too spooky for them.
That's what I was wondering. I think Tally would have hung in there.
Jump scare stuff I do get hesitant about.
Yeah.
Stuff that's like monsters and crap, I don't care because they know that's not real. But like the stuff that I knew would be driven on jump scares, yeah, I didn't want to deal with that.
Fair enough. So Father of the Year, Dave decided to send his kids to bed.
Go in the other room and watch Walking Dead. I don't know. I'm watching a horror movie in here.
Indeed. And you weren't the only one to watch that horror movie, although you did see it a little bit late. Quite a few people saw it when it came out July 22nd of 2016, so just over a year ago. It opened to $21.6 million, which is good for third place that week behind The Secret Life of Pets, which made $26.9 million. And the number one movie in the box office that week was Star Trek Beyond. It raked in $59.2 million. Lights Out went on to gross $67 million domestically, not to mention another $81.6 million in the foreign box office. We don't really talk that much about the foreign box office because we're very much pro-America on this podcast, but that brings the total haul to about $149 million off a $4.9 million budget. More on that later. But its $67 million domestic receipt was good for 1,119th place on the all-time domestic list, one spot ahead of another famous coach, Coach L. Jackson's 2005 basketball flick.
Coach Carter.
Coach Carter. And one spot behind the Paul Rudd, Sean William Scott buddy flick.
Role Models.
Role Models.
I love that
indeed.
Movie.
I do
that
as well.
That movie is so underrated. David Wayne's one of our best comedy directors.
Damn
I
it.
I love that movie.
We need to figure out. Well, maybe when Ant-Man comes out, we'll do Role Models.
Yes.
Because.
Or when Sean William Scott gets work again.
Or when Ant-Man comes out. Lights Out. Two spots ahead of a movie that maybe got a little bit more critical love last year. Mel Gibson's Oscar-nominated Hacksaw Ridge. Just a couple spots below Lights Out. And Lights Out was three spots behind Dave's favorite in the Die Hard oeuvre, A Good Day to Die Hard.
Ugh, good day to Die Hard.
It's the only one that had Mary Elizabeth Winstead, is it not?
Yeah, she's the fourth one, yeah.
Yeah.
I get Die Hard and Live Free or Die Hard mixed up.
Yeah, this one was the Mary Elizabeth Winstead, okay. Live Free, or A Good Day to Die Hard. See, okay. I just did it. Not only was Lights Out a huge success in 2016, and I would say pulling in $150 million off a $5 million budget, that qualifies it as a success. It was actually a really good year for Hollywood horror in general. The Conjuring 2 opened up in 2016 as well, grossed over $102 million, $320 million worldwide. On a $40 million budget, that'll ring the cash registers. Don't Breathe made $89 million domestically on a $10 million budget. Throw in 10 Cloverfield Lane, that was $72 million domestically. And then you had a couple movies, smaller movies, in The Boy and Ouija, Origin of Evil, more than tripled their budgets of $10 million at the box office. So if we learned anything from 2016, or learned one thing from 2016, it is that the secret to making money in movies is invest in horror. It doesn't take a $100 million budget to scare the crap out of people.
Yeah, and you're talking studio horror, which
yes.
gets a bad rap from people that love horror, because people that love horror say, oh, there's no good horror movies coming out. Mainstream horror is in a decent spot right now, and it's mostly because of James Wan. It's a large part of James Wan, but like the Conjuring spinoff, Annabelle. Say what you will about those movies. They've laid out a formula that works. Studios are seeing like, oh, we don't have to throw $150 million at a tentpole. We can spend, instead of $100 million on a movie that we hope launches a franchise, we can spend $10 million on five movies. If one of those spawns into a franchise, it's worth it.
Or even if it's not a franchise, this movie, it's hard when you get into the accounting of whether a movie was profitable or not, because there's a lot of stuff that, yes, it's not in the budget, but by the time you add in advertising and all that stuff. So
yeah,
it's,
but there's also home video sales, on-demand
yes,
sales. Like, it
right.
all evens out.
It
like,
sort of evens out.
U.S. box office is the best gauge.
Right. So this movie makes $67 million. It's a profit of $62 million just in the U.S. sales alone. So whether or not this launches a franchise or not, that's a pretty good ROI
yeah.
for your investors. And you had mentioned Wan specifically. He's credited recently with really kind of doing this low-budget horror and making it. He wasn't the first to do it.
No.
But, I mean, if you look back, when this works, when this formula works, it can work huge. Blair Witch was made for $60,000.
Paranormal.
That one, too. They returned the cameras they used to film the movie back to Circuit City after they were done, which is probably why Circuit City went out of business. And that movie made over $140 million in 99. Dave mentioned it. 8 years later, Paranormal Activity had a budget that made Blair Witch look like it was Pirates of the Caribbean. It had $15,000 to make that movie. It made almost $108 million. If you don't like found footage, no problem. The aforementioned James Wan made Saw for $1.2 million, turned it into a franchise that has grossed over $870 million worldwide.
And has another, it's not done. There's the
Jigsaw.
Jigsaw's coming out. So, and I mean, that's where the mainstream horror and the studio mentality kind of clash, is where it's like, okay, we can spend $5 million on five movies and probably make a profit on all of them and then maybe turn one into a franchise. That franchise mentality is where, did we need
yes.
10 Saw movies?
Right.
No. Do we need a Lights Out 2? No. Did we need all these Conjuring movies all under the same universe? No. Three Insidiouses. But I mean, if that can open it up to do other stuff, if those are what we need in order to get stuff like It Follows or Get Out or Don't Breathe, to put those in a primetime wide release and not just these slowly indie release, limited release darlings like they used to be, I'm fine with that. Yes, we need more Get Out. We need more Don't Breathe.
And the success of those two movies specifically, and put Lights Out in there, it was successful. I don't think it was as good of a movie as the other two. But when that happens, and when they are successful, then you're right. Not only does it give opportunities for other small-budget horror movies to get a wide release, because they can hit, it almost obligates everyone involved to go back and say, well, this was such a good investment. We have to bleed this thing out.
Yeah.
And that's why you get eight Saw movies.
Because like, I don't want an It Follows 2. I loved It Follows. I don't want to Get Out
It still too. Follows.
Yeah, I don't want to Get Out again.
Get back out.
And I love Get Out. So I think that's the risk you could take, is you can make these for less and get a director and kind of give them freedom. Because if you make it for $5 million and it only pulls in $10 million, okay.
You made money.
I think a break-even scenario is something like Lights Out, where it's makes a ton of money. I don't think it's a memorable movie. I don't think people are clamoring for Lights Out 2. I'd rather that money go towards another original horror idea that's the same
sure.
idea. This movie was far from original, and that's why it did so well overseas. It felt like Ringu
yes.
or The Grudge or whatever it was called. El
Juon.
Grudge. Yeah, Juon. Like,
El Grudge.
It felt like those kind of movies. So it was almost like a throwback to those early 2000 American remakes of
those J-horror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, I have issues with this movie. The whole idea of the movie, it made money. It was a success. But I don't think most people think about it. Like, I think it's a forgettable movie. Whereas like Get Out is a success. I think Get Out made a mark.
Yes.
As much as I love Don't Breathe, I think Don't Breathe is, for the masses, probably a forgettable movie. Like, I loved it. I think Fede Alvarez is one of the best directors out there, like,
that's,
young directors.
It made a mark within the genre because it was good. This made a mark because people enjoyed it. And that's okay. Whether or not a movie is objectively good or not doesn't mean that it can or can't make money.
Here's what I look at for mainstream horror. I break it into, you have to appeal to two crowds. You need that horror crowd, the
yep.
ones that grew up on Texas Chainsaw, Freddy J, the horror snobs almost.
Right.
It has to be enough of a horror movie to get those horror snobs. And then your 15, 16-year-old high school girls that are out on a Friday night. If you can get both of those crowds to your movie, that's what makes a successful horror movie.
That's how you get almost $70 million.
Because this did. It was a horror enough, and it had your jump scares,
yeah.
and it was simple enough for just a dumb night out with the girls.
Yeah.
My BFFs.
We've all had those. In addition to this movie and movies like it, their success allowing for other similar horror movies, I think one of the biggest things that it does is give opportunities to the directors moving forward. Sandberg specifically is attached at this point to direct Shazam for DC and Warner. James Wan went on to direct a movie in the Fast and Furious franchise, which made a ton of money, and Aquaman, not to mention all of his work as a producer. You mentioned Fede Alvarez of Don't Breathe. He's not only got a sequel to that coming out, but he was announced as the director of the Labyrinth remake. You can go on and on down the line. This is not a new phenomenon. Sam Raimi starts with Evil Dead. And
Spider-Man.
Then, yes, goes on to make Spider-Man
Guillermo
1 and
del
2.
Toro.
Yes, Guillermo del Toro. James Cameron directed Piranha 2, The Spawning. 28 years later, he's got the highest grossing film ever. And a little lady we mentioned last week makes a Western vampire movie and then becomes the first woman to ever win Best Director. This is not a recent phenomenon. This has been going on almost as far back as I can remember. I think Piranha 2 was maybe in the 70s. Horror movies becoming kind of like proving grounds. They get small budgets. If they become successful, then you can trust a director like James Cameron with $1 trillion to go make Avatar 2 through 38 and knowing that it's going to be a success.
There's some bitterness there because something comes out like The Babadook,
yeah,
which I think is a classic. I think that's an instant classic. Why wasn't that a wide release? Why wasn't that given a wide release in the States? Because I think that appeals to both of those audiences I talked about.
There's no excuse for it not getting one now.
No. Like, it's good. It's got a recognizable character. Like, it was really, really good. And Jennifer Kent should be doing any movie she wants to do right now. Because it was good. And it was good performances. And I'll give it to Teresa Palmer. She was really good in this Lights Out.
There were performances. in this movie for sure.
There were actors in this movie.
Yes. But before we get into the actors, I do want to make another couple comparisons from a director's standpoint. When we did compare this movie to a ton of other movies, and they were all apt comparisons because of the box office. We compared it to a lot of financially successful movies. But I think the comparisons really to Saw are great from sort of like a sales and movie making aspect. Juan sold Saw based off the Shawnee Smith scene, and Sandberg kind of did the same thing. That factory scene, I believe, from the beginning of the movie was the short for Lights Out that he used to get the movie sold. They both took what was maybe, if not a unique idea, an idea that was attractive to investors and asked to flesh it out into a feature.
Well, and here's my issue with one of my big issues with Lights Out. I thought the short film was great. It's really short. It cuts to the point, and it's very cool visually. When I heard they were making the full movie, it's like, well, how do you keep that up for a full movie? Turns out you really can't, because there's cool visual stuff, but you can't do 90 minutes of the cool visual stuff. So you have to fill in the stuff between the cool visual stuff, which I think that's where the movie's lacking. It did try. And it took a different angle than I would have expected. Like, it is a movie about depression, which I thought was a cool angle to take. But so much of the backstory, like the Diana backstory and the origin and stuff like that, just felt like it was forced. I like the idea of this depressed mom and the son and then the daughter who escaped but, like, is now torn of stay away or help her brother. There's some good stuff there.
I mean, in a sense, this is a little like The Babadook. You know what I mean? You
in
have
way,
that mother battling
way,
depression.
Yeah.
The difference, obviously, with this is there's a very real manifestation of the depression, and Babadook is kind of like more alluded to for the most part. Now, I wouldn't necessarily say that the performances are on a similar level with this and Babadook, but I do think this is Teresa Palmer's movie. She is carrying it,
yeah.
And I think she does a fantastic job. But I actually think Maria Bello probably was more pivotal to the story. It is her depression that kind of causes all the events and drives the plot. And I do think that throughout most of the movie, she was really good trying to carry that depression and show cracks of being able to be a fully functioning adult the way she would want to be. But maybe at the end, it's one thing to hit a home run in the bottom of the second inning when it's 0-0, but when it's the bottom of the ninth and your team's down by a run and you got one on, that's when you really need to hit the home run. And I think that maybe at the end of the movie, she just kind of tapped out to
yeah.
the pitcher or something.
Teresa Palmer is one of those that I liked her in Warm Bodies. I thought she was great in
Wonderful.
Warm Bodies. I really like her in this. And I'm thinking, like, why don't I see more of, she's one of those that I think is really good but has a terrible agent or just makes terrible decisions.
You see her in a lot of things. She's just not leading them.
Like, she was good in Triple Nine, but
yep.
like her lead, The Choice, Point Break, she was in Hacksaw Ridge.
And she was good in Hacksaw Ridge.
Yeah, like,
but
I feel like she's good in everything, but she makes
Triple Nine was not her movie.
No, but I feel like she's good in everything, but the ones that are her movies are just poorly chosen, I think.
Hell, even Warm Bodies isn't her movie. She's in it quite a bit,
yeah.
but
I want to see her do more. I think she's really good. I do like
yeah,
her.
Yeah. I mean, this was her movie. She by far had the most screen time.
And even the kid wasn't bad.
Yeah.
For a kid. Kids are usually assholes.
I hated him less than the Babadook kid. That kid is
well,
probably,
that kid was well acted.
Yes. He's probably a delight in real life. That character is miserable.
The kid was well acted. Like,
and you root for the damn monster.
Yeah. Normally with kid actors, it's like, oh, that kid's terrible. I wish they would just kill him off. He's like Draco Malfoy. Like, you hate him, but it's because he's so well acted. He's playing this terrible person so well.
Or he really is just a dick. One
of
the two. He might be.
Yeah.
Certainly. Diana was a bit of a dick. Granted, she had a bit of a grudge, if you'll pardon the pun, or an axe to grind.
A grudge, eh?
Yeah, an L grudge. Whether you look at her as either a construct of depression or an actual demon, I thought she was a really kind of a cool film creature. The design was pretty cool. Her physicality, I guess, the way she moved.
Well, she's a stunt woman. The woman that played mm-hmm. Diana is a professional stunt woman, so she was able to do cool stuff physically with her body.
Which was jarring.
Yeah, like a Doug Jones type performance where that dude can bend every way and he's just weird. So like it was he gets these roles by Del Toro.
Yeah, and it made Diana creepy as hell. Something that you and I had mentioned before we really started rolling here was, or you even mentioned at the top of the show, how you can have this idea of when the light's on, you're okay. When the light's off, you're not okay. That works really good in a short. But then how do you continue to do that over 90 minutes? And to me, it was like being on a roller coaster that only has hills. No turns, no loops, just hills. It's kind of fun.
But it starts on the highest hill.
Yes.
The opening scene is great.
Right.
The factory stuff is really cool because that's introducing you to it. And then some of the stuff gets played out, but there's some cool visual stuff. And
there are some cool...
The gunshots from the cop, I think, is great.
The tension, knowing that those lights are fleeting. Yeah. You're going to be right back in danger very, very soon. You're buying yourself a bit of a respite. It helps with the tension, but at some point, it does become, I feel, a little one-trick pony-ish.
Yeah.
In that that's really all that this movie has got.
This is one of those, like, I didn't love the movie. I thought Teresa Palmer was good.
Yep.
I really liked Sandberg. As much as I didn't like the movie, like, I look at it and I think, like, this is really well directed. For what he was given, it's paced decently. For having some excess story that wasn't needed, he does a good job of not letting it drag to a halt. Like, it does maybe drag a little bit, but he keeps it going enough. The visual stuff was great. The performances were good. Those are all things that I look for in a director, and it's like, okay, yeah, he did some cool stuff with the camera. I could see him doing bigger things. Like, I'm not interested in Annabelle Creation, but if he gets a bigger movie, like, that's a good choice. If he does a smaller movie on his own, like, I'll see it.
What I appreciated the most out of it was it wasn't just here's a killer or here's a monster eating people. It was, like we mentioned, it was a movie about depression. So there was something else behind it. And, you know, you didn't have to be a film snob to get that. I think it was pretty apparent. The one thing that I guess you could sort of have a problem with, and specifically now in this, like, post, was it 13 Reasons Why or whatever the hell that was called, like, where there's, like, the glamorization of suicide.
Which I don't understand how that, she ruined everybody's life. I don't understand how 13 Reasons Why glamorized it.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
that's a different...
It's neither here nor there, and I'm not trying to make a statement one way or the other than that was something that came out about this movie. Spoiler alert, I guess the way to defeat this demon was basically to blow your brains out. And I'm not sure if that really... This movie is about depression and how you beat depression by killing yourself.
Yeah. But
maybe that's being simplistic.
It's a little... I understand the point.
I guess I didn't really either, but when people bring it up, you kind of have to say...
The suicide is a solution being the wrong way, but I looked at it more as you can't ever truly move on until you rid of the demons that are holding you back. And in a way, like... Teresa Palmer wanted to do good. She wanted to be this good person, but she had this past with her mom that she couldn't get past. Her brother, she couldn't truly move on because he was attached to her and she just couldn't get away. So, like, I feel like it's still a part of them because even when they're staring death in the face and it's like, if we stay in this house, chances are we're going to die.
Right.
Even then,
she goes back in.
She goes back in and it's, she's unable to just get away and not escape. I don't mean escape, but like when there's something that's always holding you back, it's always going to hold you back while it's there. So in a way, her, I wouldn't even call it suicide, her sacrificing herself is ridding that of holding him back. So even if you take the demon out of it, now she could get guardianship of her brother. They can move wherever. There's not this... Did mom take her medication? Like, what's there's no worrying about that. So in a way, it's just, it's an effed up way to do it. Like, and it is, when you get down to it, suicide as a solution.
Right.
But in a bigger picture, it's just about, you can't truly move on until those demons are defeated. Yeah, maybe there was a different way to defeat it, but I get it.
I mean, this was the way that movie chose to do it. And again, I don't think
it's... Which is why I don't want to Lights Out too.
That's kind of what we're going to get to, because I had read that it's being talked about pretty heavily. And you can understand, with this movie making money, that's what happens. Don't Breathe 2. that's what happens. You kind of have to feed that beast a little bit. And Sandberg had said in the interview he did with AV Club, where he talked about the suicide, not wanting to glamorize that or just wanting to make a movie about depression. He had also mentioned that he would like to see a Lights Out to kind of expand more on his story. And I'm not really sure how that could happen without some really clever writers. I mean, there was an alternate ending of this that he had screened for some test audiences, where even after Maria Bello kills herself, the demon shows back up before finally being defeated, I believe. And the audiences hated it because
she killed herself for nothing.
Exactly. So I guess if Diana shows back up in Lights Out 2, then aren't we really doing the same thing?
There's a couple ways you can end horror movies. And this went with the hopeful route, where they defeat the demon.
Right.
And it's not gloom in the end. Where something like Fallen, yeah, Denzel kills himself. That's the solution. But it's kind of a thing like, oh, you cannot defeat this.
It's only part of the solution.
Like, you cannot defeat this because cats are the worst. The thing. I mean, it's not suicide, but it's
pretty
in
close.
A way, it's as close as you can get. But like, so I mean, there's different ways to do it. Suicide may be an odd choice for an ending with hope, but it worked. Like, I feel like he pulled it off, and I feel like a sequel would cheapen that.
Right. I will admit that I didn't really see the suicide thing coming.
Oh, I did. Halfway through, I said, she's going to kill herself. Yeah. The movie was very predictable, I think. Like, I called that halfway through.
It may
have
been. I try and go out of my way to not figure out the ending, just because I didn't want to have to sit there for 45 minutes thinking that I know what's going to happen, and then basically rooting for that outcome so I can be right. But I didn't feel like it was an awful way to end the movie. I think you're right. You do have, you know, a main character that does bite it. This was a real dangerous thing.
In a way, like, that's another thing with horror movies. Like, the stakes were,
for this family, they were as high as they could get. But
were they? You have essentially four main characters. Three of them get out of there alive. So I guess to get the body count up, you have two random cops show up.
And the dad, stepdad, he bites it at the beginning. I mean, this was a family being terrorized, like Poltergeist. You know what I mean? Like, it was only a problem for that one family. Certainly not like the thing where it's going to take over the entire world. But in a year that had quite a few good horror stories, this is not something I'm going to rewatch a ton. But I thought it was a solid movie, probably better than I had expected it to be.
When it comes to horror movies that you see make a lot of money at the box office, this is one I look at. I don't get mad.
Right.
I could see it.
Yeah,
like,
I don't have a problem
liking
this
movie,
with people telling me they liked it.
Yeah, like, I see garbage stuff make a lot of money, and it's like, it's Big Bang Theory of horror, pretty much. Like, it's lowest common denominator, and it's just like, really? Like, but this, I don't feel was that.
No, certainly. I mean, I think we've talked enough about how we think that the director actually has a pretty good amount of talent.
Yeah.
And we've mentioned the lead, Teresa Palmer. She's really good. It was a good enough idea. There's something to this. It was a clever enough idea that I don't feel like, you know, I burned an hour and a half. I expect that Sandberg will be a name that we'll hear from again. He made his mark in this genre. Maybe he'll continue to work there. Maybe he won't. But next week, we're going to talk a little bit about a director whose name you should be very familiar with. One of Dave's favorites, and that's Steven Soderbergh. So we'll run down our five favorite Soderbergh jams.
I forgot we were doing that episode.
Next week.
I'm so excited now.
Yeah.
I hope I made the list.
Hopefully you guys are excited as Dave is. We're going to do it right now. You guys have to wait till next week. But until then,
keep it up.